Hello and welcome to this month's kosher teleconference. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg and this is Rabbi Baruch Bayer.
Hello.
Brought to you by kosherclasses.org. We are broadcasting from Baltimore, Maryland, and we are assisted by Reb Zev Seem. This month's teleconference is a week early. Usually we have it the last Wednesday of every month, but today it's the week early because of some scheduling issues.
All right.
And we're going to discuss today, the topic is going away for the summer, hotels, bungalows, and cabins for the kosher traveler. We are you're joining us either by Dimdim or through the telephone on dimdim.com. If you're there, the class word is kosher. And if you're joining us by telephone, or if you want to join us by telephone, the phone number is...
Please join us by telephone.
The phone number is 218-895-1203. Passcode 2020. So, Rabbi Bayer, a lot of people are going away for the summer or for a portion of the summer for their vacations.
Yeah.
Many people in New York especially go up to...
the country.
The country, what they call the country,
yeah.
To the bungalows. And the bungalow is basically... How would you describe a bungalow?
I think the modern-day bungalow nowadays is different than what we remember bungalows used to be. You know, bungalows in the old days was like a little... kind of like a couple rooms and whatever. But nowadays, don't they have these like, you know... You're talking like houses.
Well, they are houses. They're, right.
I mean, you know, luxurious. You know, nicer than your regular house kind of house. That's what it seems like. But
well, that depends on I think which bungalow you go to. But some are nicer, some are not as nice. Some are smaller. Some people when they
right.
you know they sort of cram so themselves into the
room. We're talking about the basic
the concept of a bungalow. It doesn't matter which
right.
type it is. Now, one thing that I think that people may not realize is that although when they are in the city, let's say on Shabbos, they basically walk wherever they want to walk, wherever they want to go. When mm-hmm. you're out in the country,
mm-hmm.
you have to be more concerned about tichum issues,
right?
Which is that the rabbis limited a person the amount of air of distance he can walk away from his house. Now in a city
on Shabbos
in the city everything is considered like one big area, but when you're dealing with let's say a bungalow colony or camp situation, kids going to camp,
right?
Then you don't have all that much distance away from the outskirts of the bungalow or camp that you could walk. It's
mm-hmm.
basically just 3/4 of a mile or so, and that's not very much. It's a 10-15 minute walk.
Right.
Talking about. So you want to be careful with that. You want to make sure you know what the tchum is and how far you can go, even though it's not something we normally think about.
Right. I'd imagine a lot of the camps probably have their own. Eruv wouldn't make a difference.
Well, the eruv around the camp or
right.
the bungalow will let you carry
within the camp. But once
and you can't
the camp,
carry outside
right.
the camp. Well, I'm not talking about carrying here.
We're talking about outside the camp. Correct.
Just simply right. walking outside the camp, and right. that is a different story.
Right.
Even if you're not carrying anything, so you go to your bungalow, you go to your campsite, your cabin, and one thing you're going to have to do, probably, unless it's kosher all year round, is to kosherize the equipment that's there.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to.
After you kill the spiders.
After you kill the spiders, you're going to have to kosherize the
Lysol,
sink or the oven.
Right.
the refrigerator, just basically clean it.
Right.
There are various things that you have to do in order to get it kosher. No, we're not going to go through the entire gamut of how to kosherize a,
all the different pieces of equipment.
Unless someone has a particular question that they want to ask, but your oven, you'll clean, and you'll turn it on for 45
right.
minutes on high.
And all the information is available.
All the information is available on our website.
On our website.
More or less, it's the same as
koshering for
normal
koshering, like for Passover.
For Passover, it's more or less the same. But you have to know that you're going to have to do that and be aware before you go
right.
that's an issue.
Well, what happens if I don't want to kosher my kitchen, but I want to cook outside in the barbecue pit that's provided?
Okay, barbecue pit. Okay, that's a good question.
That was a segue.
Yeah, the barbecue pit.
Like that?
Barbecue pit is an interesting question because people are cooking there. Let's say you're in the park. You don't have to go away to a bungalow
right.
for this, but in the park, you go and they have a barbecue pit for you. Well, people are using it before you are using it for all sorts of non-kosher items, treif and
mm-hmm.
whatever it is that they might be using there, and it's all over, and they don't exactly clean it out before. After they're using it.
Right.
So how could you use a barbecue pit in a way that would be kosher? Well, first of all, maybe you don't want to...
Describe it, first of all. What are we talking
okay.
about here?
Describe it.
So we're not really talking about a pit, per
could,
se.
Could be a pit.
Could be a pit, but I think, at least in my experience with parks, state parks and national parks, usually we're talking about like a... It's a freestanding barbecue or grill, is what we're really referring to, I think, which has its grating on it, and then it has the area on the bottom of the below the grate where you can put your coals. So
okay.
I think that's what we're
right.
referring to.
Mm-hmm. So you may not want to deal with the whole koshering issue and just
right.
bring a portable one, which is very inexpensive nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you do want to barbecue in the pit. The biggest problem is the grate.
Right.
Because the grate has had non-kosher sitting directly on top of it, and that's something that can't,
right.
you can't put your food on top of it unless you're going to do what we call a libun gomer.
Right.
A full-blown koshering with a fire, with a
blowtorch or whatever.
That's right. not really practical in such a place. I don't even know if you'd be allowed to do that, because it's not...
it's probably not legal.
Not your equipment. You
right.
don't own it. And I don't know if they would agree to that. So
yeah.
what you need to do is bring your own... If you want to go through this, bring your own grate.
Mm-hmm.
And something that's going to be larger
right.
than whatever the grate they have there, so it can
sit. You need a good size. We're talking probably, I don't know, 2 feet at least, something like that, maybe more.
Right.
2.5 feet, maybe 3 feet.
Right.
Long.
Okay, and then you don't want to put that directly on the grate that they have there already.
Right.
So you'll want to...
I'm going
to
take the grate out. Take the old grate out.
Oh, you can take the old grate out.
You
okay.
take the old grate out.
Okay.
And put the new grate, slide the new grate.
But it should be sitting on something else. It shouldn't be sitting directly on the whatever you call it, the thing
the
that
little
holds.
Slots that hold
it shouldn't
the
be
normal
sitting directly on that, because there's going to be non-kosher there too.
So then what do we... So we want to cover... So then you want it sitting on top of the walls.
Yeah, you want
it
sitting on top of the wall, but separated by something, like some rocks or some bricks or something. So that way you have a separation between the two.
That's not practical, that is.
It's not practical?
I'm just thinking, while Goldberg's saying bricks, I mean...
Not bricks, but something...
If you're going to put something... The walls are thin.
Okay.
So you're trying to balance something on top of those walls. It's not going to balance very well.
Okay. Well, you got to have some way of separating
foil.
You could use aluminum foil. That would
okay.
work
that
too.
Would probably be the most practical
okay.
thing.
Okay.
Bring a roll of aluminum foil. Many, many uses.
And then basically you'll put your coals in to
right.
into the pit
area where the coals are supposed to go,
and that
and then you're ready to roll.
that should be sufficient to burn right. everything out that's there.
We occasionally get these questions, though. I just wanted to bring this up. Do briquettes, charcoal briquettes, need a hechsher? We've got that question.
Yes, okay. And the answer is?
And the answer is no.
No, I do not need a hechsher.
Do not okay. need a hechsher.
Okay.
Even the kind that are like, you know, flavored, like mesquite or
mm-hmm.
or oak or whatever it is that they right. got, you can use those.
Right. We do not require hechsher for them.
Except maybe for like bacon flavors, like that. Right. That would be a problem.
Right. There is an activity that people like to do when they go out to these foresty kind of places, and that is fishing.
Ah.
People like to fish.
Yes, we know what a big fisherman you are, a big old bird.
Yes. I know all about it.
Yes.
Just as a backtrack to an issue we've discussed previously here on this show, mm-hmm. and that is the worms in the fish. And people are now concerned about that. The Starkeys has its recommendations.
Right.
But they should know that if they are fishing in a lake, then there is no problem of these Anisakis worms
in the freshwater
in the freshwater fish.
Right.
They only are an issue in the oceans.
So if you're going like deep sea fishing,
then it could be an issue for certain fish, right? But if you're in the lake and you're just fishing over right. over your boat or whatever,
so
you're
the only worms there. You need to worry about in the lake are the ones at the end of your hook.
Okay,
that's a good way to say it, I think.
Right. Okay. At the end of the hook, and those you're going to take out of the, you're going to gut it anyway, so
that's right.
It's not a problem. Let's say you catch a fish you're not familiar with. Okay, you caught something that you're just not.
It has this big fin on the back and a long, pointy.
Yeah, so you know that's not kosher.
No.
But what about if you see it looks like it has fins and scales, but you're not 100% sure. How can you be sure that it's a kosher fish? You're not familiar with fish. Well, every fish that has scales has fins, so then you know that it would be okay. Now, how do you know if it has scales? Well, you can see the scales, but not all scales are considered to be kosher scales.
Uh-huh.
The scales have to be able to be removed without pulling off any of the skin. So, for instance, an eel, E-E-L, also has scales. But those scales are part of the skin. You can't pull it off without pulling off part of the skin. So what you have to do is check that you can scale it with a knife and the scales come off easily.
Uh-huh.
And then you'd know that it is a kosher fish, because every fish that has fins has scales, has fins also.
Where does that claw come from?
It's a Gemara.
That's a Gemara.
It's in the Talmud. And that's how you would check if it's a kosher fish, and then you simply would open it up. You gut it, cut it. It doesn't...
You don't have to
shecht or
slaughter. Slaughtering
there's
required.
No kosher slaughtering of fish like there would be with fowl or with animals. You just have to make sure it's dead, and then you can open it up and enjoy the fish. And especially if it's in a lake, you don't have to worry about worms.
Unless you want sushi or something like that. Yeah.
You want to give them a recipe, Rabbi?
If I had one.
Okay, now the good thing about traveling nowadays...
Should we mention anything about the fact if you only have like limited equipment to use? Let's say you have one frying pan. Is there an issue as far as cooking...
Of cooking fish and meat
fish
in
and
one
meat in the same frying
in
pan.
One pan. Okay, that's a good point. If you have just one frying pan... So the
Talmud says that we're supposed to avoid
mixing fish and meat. Correct.
For health reasons.
Correct. So some people are stricter about it, that they have separate utensils, like not separate cooking utensils,
mm-hmm.
like a pot,
special
fish
pan.
Pot or fish pan.
Right, right.
Others are not. According to the Jewish law, one is permitted to use the same utensils as long as they're cleaned in between.
Mm-hmm.
But yet many, I would say, have stringency about it, and they go and they have a separate utensil for cooking the fish and the meat. So here, if you had one pan I would ask you, what do you do at home? At home, do you, let's say, typically when if people have gefilte fish, do you cook it in a separate pot, or you use your meat pot? If, whatever you do at home, you should do when you're on the road over here.
Okay.
The good thing about traveling nowadays is that there's so much kosher food that is available. It's really very widely available. You can go into any supermarket and
Walmart,
or anywhere, where almost wherever you are. And pick up kosher food there. I mean, you know, from Cheerios to tuna fish, sometimes even bread. Maybe not fresh bread, because that's more of a locally baked product.
Right.
But you could get bagels.
I mean, there's tons of packaged products out there nowadays that have reliable certifications on them. It may pay to bring along a list of reliable certifications if you're not familiar with them yourself, because it could be in certain parts of the country you'll come into a supermarket and they'll have a certification, you won't be familiar with it, but it's really reliable, you just don't know.
Right.
So
that's possible.
Or you could bring the Star K phone number and you can call us. We haven't mentioned hotels.
We didn't mention that yet. People go away to hotels, and that was a little project of mine. I wrote an article a couple months ago, and it's up on our site. If you go to star-k.org and type in the word hotels with an S, you can bring up that article and see all the different issues that a person should look into.
So we're not talking here about necessarily a kosher hotel.
Right, no.
Just, a motel on the side of the road kind of a deal, or for a couple of nights or whatever the case
is. Right, so if you're there for weekday, there are certain issues. If you're there on the Sabbath, on Shabbos, there are certain issues. We have discussed previously the coffee maker in the room, that some people would like to use that coffee maker for coffee.
Right.
And B, for making soup or something they'd like to heat up, because they can't get a takeout. So they bring along some instant soup and they would like to make the soup in the coffee maker or drink the coffee. Plain coffee is okay, without flavors is okay. But the issue that we've had is that perhaps somebody before you, the previous guest, has used the coffee maker to do what you want to do, which is heat up some soup in there, and his soup was not kosher.
Right, so we're really referring to that part of the coffee maker, that glass pitcher that the coffee maker comes with. So that could have been used for non-kosher. I mean, they might have been heating something up also, which we don't know about. Is that what we're saying?
They were talking about in the carafe.
In the carafe.
That's where the problem is, because they put something into the carafe and they put it onto the
heating element.
They put on the heating element. They pour water through and it comes into the container, and that's really where the problem is. And we recommend not to use those carafes because of that reason. Although we also recognize that it's unusual for other people to have used it, because they can usually buy whatever they want. But it does happen that they do. We have had reports that people do use the carafes for non-kosher food, and therefore recommend that kosher consumers do not. We have a question here, just on the side. A controversial question: if you can't get Chol Yisrael milk, and the milk has no certification, can it still be used? Okay, and then we have a reply, which is correct, which was that Rav Moshe Feinstein, who's the great posek halachic decisor of the previous generation, did permit that, and there are many people who rely on that, and they use
in the U.S.
they use non Chol Yisrael milk, just regular plain milk.
Does not need a special certification.
Right, so it's not Chol Yisrael. It's not they have a special level of Chol Yisrael, of supervised milk, but it is nonetheless kosher, and many people have. So it depends what a person's custom is. Right. I mean, we can't make a blanket statement. The Star-K products only have Chol Yisrael. We do have a separate certification, Star D, that is not Chol Yisrael, but Star-K per se is Chol Yisrael. But people will do what they
right.
do at home. The fact that they're, I guess the question could be the fact that they're on the road with, and they can't get the Chol Yisrael.
Is that extenuating enough to...
Right, is that extenuating circumstances? And the answer, I think, to that would be it depends how strictly...
You keep it at home.
They keep
right.
it at home.
Right.
If they've kept it, you know, and they've kept it 100%, then I don't think that they would want to be lenient about it going out on the road.
So you'll need to bring your Chol of Israel with you.
Need to
which
bring...
Which we've done.
You
personally.
Do that?
We have done that in the past.
You bring
you keep it frozen and bring it in a cooler and hopefully a refrigerator wherever you're going. So it kind of, you know, that's how we do it.
Uh-huh. Okay. There's also powdered milk you could bring, right? The powdered Chol Yisrael
right,
milk?
Right, there's powdered. Right. Actually, you could use powdered milk and you could use the heter. There is a permissibility to use powdered milk even if it's not Chol Yisrael.
That is true. That is true. But there is also powdered milk that is Chol Yisrael.
Right.
And someone who's careful for that would want to use that.
I had a question about the barbecue again.
Going back to the barbecue discussion, do wood chips for flavoring need hashgacha? Do they need to be certified? Wood chips for flavoring.
If you're talking about just plain wood chips.
They burn them, you burn them together.
You mean like a mesquite wood chip that you burn it together with your coals to give some sort of flavor. I don't think that
I think we say that they do not require
certification.
Number one, because there's probably no kosher problem with it. Number two, even if there would be, it's getting burnt up. I don't think we require any I don't think
you're
going to
say the flavor is going to get into your food, but it's
I don't think we've come across any kosher issue with any kosher issue with it. So, okay. But please feel free to chat if you're able to join us. I see the way it's working is that some people are listening by phone and then chatting.
Here's a little bit of a controversial question, Rabbi Goldberg, that I know we didn't discuss before before getting on the air today.
Are you putting me on the spot?
A little bit. Yes.
Okay.
But it's not that bad. What about swimming? Some people want to go swimming while they're on vacation. Do we have anything to say regarding that?
They want to go swimming when they're on vacation? Not during the 9 days.
Not during the 9 days, right. This is post 9 days we're talking, right, exactly.
And why? You're talking about mixed swimming?
Right, so then we have questions, right. That's all I was just bringing up, that a person should, you know, people should be...
let's say Star-K would not give a certification on a hotel unless it had...
Unless it had separate hours.
Separate swimming.
Separate swimming and also a
closed
area for women to
They could swim modestly.
Right.
Therefore, when there are hotels with a outdoor pool,
mm-hmm.
we would not let them have certification. And that's one of the reasons that there aren't very many hotels with the Star-K certification.
That's right.
Because
there aren't many that would be willing to do
that. To keep
but if you're traveling and you stop at a motel somewhere along the road for the night and your kids want to go swimming in the motel pool, so I guess that would be something really we could probably discuss with your...
You have to deal with... Yeah, it's not really a kosher issue, but you have to deal with the ages of the kids and the lifeguard and the...
Right.
And
there are ways to
all the different issues that come up.
It
is a sensitive issue, but it's really dependent on all of the factors that you have to know. The fact is sometimes people could go swimming early in the morning. Sometimes people go when there's no one around. I mean, then you get into the issue of there's no lifeguard. Is that, you know,
that's also
a safety issue?
Right.
So, but there are things that could be there are hotels that have certification that do have separate swimming.
Right.
And that's one of the
draws for a kosher hotel.
For a kosher hotel,
right.
That they have separate swimming. So,
it's just something to be aware of.
Right.
Someone wants to talk about Shabbos and keys and things like that, I think.
What are the potential issues with electronic keys and Shabbos? Well, nowadays, it's true that most of the hotels, although not all of them, but most of them are using electronic keys, which is basically like a credit card, looks like a credit card. And you slide it through your lock, and it opens the door. Now, that obviously cannot be done on Shabbos because you're initiating an electronic function. There are some hotels that still have regular keys, few and far between, in some of their rooms. And so there are, someone told me about a hotel in L.A. that has, he knows of in the religious area, that has set aside rooms with keys. And there are some other hotels. That someone told me an interesting thing, that sometimes you can get if you have a convention or a Shabbaton or a bar mitzvah, you can arrange with the hotel to change the locks into keyed locks, but that's an expense, and you have to be willing to bear that expense.
Mm-hmm.
What we tell people generally is to leave this key at the desk and to arrange beforehand, tell the staff that you have this issue, that you cannot open the door, and that would they be willing on the Sabbath to go up with you to your room taking the key and have them open the door and then take the key back with them for the next time.
Right.
And we allow that, the halachic reason that we allow that is the shvus to shvus b'makom onik Shabbos or b'makom tzarech. The need over here would be to go into your room to take a nap, to get a sitter, to get some food.
Right.
Should not walk in and out just for a minor reason, especially since you don't want to bother the staff that often. So you want them to keep.
That's a good point.
You don't want them to keep. You don't want to keep bothering them.
Right.
I mean, in general, the office staff, the hotel staff, is willing to help. There are times when they do not want to offer their assistance.
Mm-hmm.
They're not that friendly. You know, it depends a little bit.
That's rare, I think.
Depends a little bit on the part of the country you're in.
Yeah.
And it depends on where you are. It depends what kind of chain it is, hotel chain.
Right.
I imagine if you go to a large hotel chain, like the Hilton just comes
to
mind,
those kind of money,
I don't think that they're not going to question it, and they want your business.
Right.
But I tell people they should ask in advance, and in my article I delineate some of the issues, and I really want to do this earlier by is make up like a small checklist that you could take, and you know, because it's difficult to remember all the issues that you're going to have, and so the person could have a handy list.
What to ask and what to be aware of. That's a good idea.
For instance, let's say with Shabbos candles, are they going to be able to light the candles on Friday night, or you're not going to be allowed to do that?
Right.
Some hotels
will allow it, some won't.
Some allow it, and I've had experience myself and with others that they've said to the hotel staff, you know, I want to light some candles, is that a problem? Then no problem. Others, they'll be very upset. They don't want to allow you to do that because they're afraid of a fire.
Right.
I read that there was one fellow who lit, not a Jewish person, and nothing to do with Friday night, but he just lit some candles in the room, and he went out to get something, and he came back and
the sprinkler was going on.
The hotel was burnt.
Down,
yeah, because it caught fire.
Oh my goodness!
And he wasn't very smart. He put them on the floor, on the carpet. So
I see. Okay.
That. I guess in some casing or something like that, but it wasn't very intelligent. And, you know, but that's what the hotel is afraid of.
Right.
Maybe, you know, rightly so. So you have to check with them. If they do not allow candles, you have a couple options. One is to light an incandescent bulb, an incandescent lamp.
What's an incandescent bulb, Rabbi Goldberg?
What's an incandescent bulb?
For those of us who are modern people who only use those newfangled, funny-looking ones.
The spirals.
Yeah.
It's not fluorescent.
Not fluorescent.
And it's not, what are those called? The CFLs.
Not a CFL.
Compact fluorescent. It's what Thomas Edison created.
Don't tell Al Gore.
Thomas Edison created where you have a filament inside.
Right.
And you can actually see the filament.
Now,
it's not frosted also.
So you need
to not be frosted.
You need a clear,
frosted,
old-fashioned light bulb.
Right.
Is what we're talking about.
Right. An old-fashioned light bulb, and you can use that to light up, make a bracha on that and light up your room.
Right.
Or, with no other choice,
do you do that exactly? You make the bracha and then flip the switch? You flip the switch and make the bracha?
Well, a woman would flip the switch and then make the bracha.
Okay. A woman would flip the switch and then make the bracha.
Right. Or you can use even a flashlight.
And you can use that for haftalah also, I think, right?
Correct.
If you need to.
Right. You can also use a flashlight for, I don't know if you can use...
How can you do that? You can leave on the flashlight.
for Havdalah, I'm not sure, but for Friday night, we allow a flashlight, an incandescent flashlight, again, which is the old-fashioned
right.
bulb,
right.
the little bulb, but
so
not, the,
LED.
Not the newest LED
flashlight.
Flashlights. Those right. are not sufficient for this purpose. And that is something you
need
use.
To leave the flashlight on the whole Shabbos.
You leave it on from Friday before you light candles,
right.
and you make sure that the batteries in there will last
at least for
the amount of time,
a couple hours or whatever,
till after it gets dark, so
right.
that you can benefit from them. You can't have them run out on you if you have a flashlight lying around. The batteries may be spent or mm-hmm. you know or old, so you want to get a flashlight with fresh batteries. You could use two flashlights. There's a custom to have two candles and then two flashlights. You can. There
what if I light custom. Eight candles usually Friday night? Do I need to light?
If you light eight candles Friday night,
eight
I would
flashlights?
Not. No. When you go away, you can light two. I would recommend, even if the hotel allows you to light the candles, not lighting eight candles,
okay.
because it may set off the smoke detector.
The smoke detector or set off the
right. And when
the alarm and everything else. Right.
Right. But if you're lighting, there is a very strong custom that even if you light a large number when you are
travel.
At home, when you travel, you can light just
light two.
Right. So,
what's another alternative to that lighting issue? Is there a way to light in some other area, possibly? If you can't light in your room,
Lighting in another area is problematic unless you're gonna, if you're eating in
the dining
room.
In the dining room,
then you can light downstairs in the dining room. Some people have it set up where they light outside the dining room. Mm-hmm. They make a big communal area where everybody's going to light. That's
usually in kosher hotels, though. Right?
That's in kosher hotels, but that's a big issue because it's not really halakhically acceptable. At one of the hotels that the Star K has, we set up such a table mm-hmm. inside the dining room. You know, so people can light where they're eating.
Got it.
Yeah, Dovi is saying problem with the flashlight is that the battery will die too soon. Well, if you have a fresh battery, then it really should last a couple of hours. You can check that out.
Right.
If you had a fresh flashlight,
a
D battery or a C battery should be able to last a couple of hours.
Right.
Okay, Rabbi Bayer, I think we'll stop there. Somebody is suggesting that a nightlight will do, the ordinary nightlight. It's true that the ordinary nightlight is incandescent.
Right.
The question I have with,
it gives off enough
with
light.
It, does it give off you know enough light
enough,
or significant?
Enough light. Right.
It's sitting there in the corner. It's not really doing anything. If it's in the middle of the room, so it adds something. You see it.
Right.
If it's going to be on the side, I would like it to really add something so that it should really be functional.
Stronger.
If you're leaving,
yeah.
if you're leaving the lights on in the room, and then you're going to have that light, it's not really doing anything. You barely see it. I'm uncomfortable with that a little bit. If you leave the lights off and you have the night light, then it's fine because the night light will provide you with light to help you to prevent you from stumbling into things,
right.
which is the point. But if you have some people keep the room lights on, and then
mm-hmm.
and that's not sufficient because those are fluorescent, and then they're going
right.
to light a little night light in the corner. I have a little bit of an issue with it, but technically you could work it out that you could use a night light also. Wish everyone a safe and happy
summer.
Summer. The next class will be as regularly scheduled the last Wednesday of the month, which is. The end of August. I don't have the date right on me, but it's the last Wednesday of August, and God willing, we'll reconvene then. We want to thank everybody for joining us, and thank you, Rabbi Bayer.
Thank you.
The 25th? It's the 25th of August. Thank you, Zev. We want to thank Zev for helping us out here. And this class is archived at kosherclasses.org. KosherClasses. .org under podcasts, and you can be able to see it there. It should be in a few days, and all our other classes are archived there as well. If you have any questions that you didn't get answered, please feel free to email us at star-k@star-k.org, star-k@star-k.org, or call us at 410-484-4255. 4110, and
we'll be happy to help you.
And we'll try to do our best to help you. Thanks very much for joining us. Take care.
Bye.